Welcome to the Kinky Cast, a sexually explicit podcast for adults. You are listening to a weekly publication, produced every Friday morning. The Kinky Cast is heard in over 150 countries. This is our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Today, we present episode 284, Abduction and Interrogation with Travis, recorded at Frolicon. Don't forget to stop by our webpage for information about this show and others. KinkyCast.com. Here's your host, Travis.
Abduction interrogation is a topic I presented lots of times here, North Carolina. I've done it in Kansas. I've done it in Chicago. I travel a lot in places where I go. Sometimes I'll also combine that with meeting with groups and speaking. It's probably one of my favorite things to talk about. Really, we're just going to talk about what it is. We're not going to do a demo. We're not going to do a hands-on thing. It's just kind of what this really is and how it works and things you have to be aware of. I'll give you a little bit of myself. I'm Travis. I live in Athens, Georgia. We have a pretty vibrant community in Athens, smaller than Atlanta, but still vibrant. I do come out to stuff in Atlanta. I try to go to Whimper occasionally when I can make it. Not so much 1763, because of what I like to do. Some of what we talk about in here isn't allowed in 1763. So they don't do breath play. You can't do any kind of like wrestling or takedown scenes or anything like that, which is a lot of what I like to do. So 1763 is great. I can't do stuff I want to do there. And in this drive, I entered lifestyle actively, meaning I first went out to my public things when I was 19. So I can say I've actively been in the lifestyle since 27 years or so. So 27 years young, that's it, right? So I've seen a lot of different communities. I've been very active in the community in the Virginia Beach area. I've been in the community down here. And then I travel a lot, so I've been to Munches and Dungeons all around. So not that I know everything by any means, but I've seen a lot of what works, a lot of what doesn't work, and not being completely stupid, I've picked some of that up. So abduction interrogation. So when you think of interrogation, there's lots of things in the media about it. There's lots of historical things about interrogation, and we can incorporate a lot of that into what we can do with BDSM roleplay for interrogation. Some of it's pretty powerful, right? Like, so if you're doing a Nazi interrogation scene, there's a lot of things that can go into that as triggers. There's a lot of, you know, political consequences possibly for that. So those are all things you have to talk about when you negotiate an interrogation. And one of the biggest things about an interrogation scene is negotiation, understanding that you can cause people some trauma, emotional trauma, as well as physical, and being, you know, accounting for that and making them aware of it. I like definitions. So I like what words mean. So the actual definition of interrogation is the action of interrogating someone or the process of being interrogated, right? So when we're interrogating someone, what are we usually trying to find? We've watched cop shows and stuff, right? What are we doing in an interrogation? We're trying to find something specific, right? So where did you hide the body? Where's the money? What's the passcode to the zip drive that has the national secrets on it, right? So an interrogation is it someone in a position of authority, whether structural authority, like a police officer or whatever, or if it's a hostage taker or whatever, someone in a position of authority that's using whatever means they can to get specific information from the subject or the victim. So that's what interrogation is. And so there's torture, which torture in itself can just be for the point of torture. If you're a sadist, you can torture someone just because you like to fucking hurt them. I like that too, right? But interrogation is you can incorporate torture into it, although it doesn't have to be torture, but it's for that purpose of finding a specific set of information. This is all my opinion, right? I don't know that there's any other people that agree with me or whatever. I feel in an interrogation scene for BDSM purposes, there has to be some critical elements. One of those is there has to be a goal. We'll talk about what some of those goals could be. There has to be a goal. You have to understand the person's hard limits, because even though we're doing interrogation, it's still consensual. It's a form of CNC or consensual non-consent. So you have to have negotiated the limits. I think there has to be a time limit, because if there's not a time limit, eventually everybody breaks. When you go through training in the military, in the event that you're captured, everybody will break. Every single person will break under torture. It's a matter of when you break. right? Some people right away, some people days, months, whatever, but you're going to break. So for us, for BDSM, we need to have a time limit that gives the victim or the person being interrogated, they have their goal of making it to this time limit, and they win, right? And so we'll talk about how we can set that scenario up. Aftercare. Aftercare, I think, is with this type of play is even more important. And maybe not that, like, I'm just going to, you know, hug you and give you some water and a blanket, but this kind of play can cause PTSD in people. It can bring up triggers they didn't know they had. So aftercare might be, you know, for the next week or two, daily checking in with that person. Like, you know, if you don't live with them, if you're just friends or whatever, daily checking in, like, hey, are you okay? You want to go grab a bite to eat and talk, you know, whatever. So aftercare doesn't end 30 minutes after an 8-hour scene. It can take longer. The whole point of an interrogation scene is literally to make the person break, right? So a lot of scenes, you go into the dungeon and they think, well, if you're a dominant, you make your sub say red, you failed as a dominant because you wasn't observing there, whatever, right? With interrogation, the whole absolute point of the scene is to make them break. So it's a different mindset. It's not a mindset of I want to push them a little bit, we're going to have fun, and we're going to explore. It's I'm going to make them say red. Red being that secret, whatever it is. So you're approaching it with a whole different mindset, which means it's probably going to be some of the more intense things that they have done and you as a top have done as well. Keeping that in mind. All right. So before I go any further, anyone have any questions, comments, inputs, or anything? This can be interactive. It doesn't have to be. I can talk all day. But,
yes, sir. What's the name of that training? SEER training?
SEER training.
S-E-R-E.
Military pilots, military special forces, and then military people who are being deployed with the likelihood of being captured by the enemy have to go through it. I was in the Navy for 20 years, and I deployed to Afghanistan. And before I went to Afghanistan, because, you know, there's no fucking ships in the desert, I had to go through that as well. Part of it is initiating you into what torture might be like or what capture might be like. So part of it is how to escape, how to evade the enemy, how to eat grubs or worms or whatever. And then when you do get caught, because you do get caught, what that experience might be like on a very limited scale. I've heard it's gotten a little bit softer now, like everything is getting softer. But for a while, it was pretty intense training. So not as intense as being captured by the enemy, though, so typically. That's kind of what an interrogation scene is. Super intense, pretty dangerous. The point is to make the bottom break. How do we actually go about it? This can be the fun part. So you can incorporate role play. Anybody have any ideas of ways you can do role play? Any roles you could use?
Criminal and
Russians.
Russian spy being captured, right?
A criminal and like an officer.
A criminal and officer.
Lawyer and witness.
Usually lawyers don't torture you, but you never know. IRS and feels like it, right? Yes.
Like a sandwich trial type of thing, also.
I'm sorry?
Salem witch trial type of stuff, also.
Ah, I hadn't thought of that one before. Salem witch trial. Let's see if you sink or float. Can you burn them at the stake? I don't know if you can find that far.
You can simulate it.
You simulate it. Any other ideas?
Serial killer.
Serial killer? Almost like a. If you look at Dexter, there was a couple times where Dexter interrogated like the other serial killer that he caught. Not that I'm a fan of Dexter or anything.
Pull the killer itself. Just
or the killer himself.
An interrogation just found
it. Where did you hide all the bodies? Where did the, you know, whatever. Absolutely. Some of the ones y'all talked about, police and criminal, FBI and terrorist, priest and sinner. Right? Go back to the medieval ages. They tortured people to get confessions. Nazi and victim, insurance and claimant, IRS and taxpayer. The list is limitless, really. I think the key, though, in the roles is there still has to be something specific that the victim is withholding from you. And again, that's one of my critical elements to what interrogation is. Part of what you're doing is you're creating a mental state that the person really believes you're going to hurt them or whatever. And that can be kind of hard. So I'll use a personal example. This right over here, Connie, we've been married 26 years. For the longest time, thank you, it's really her that made it this far, put up with me. So for the longest time, I never did an interrogation scene with her. Part of it was because, I mean, she knows I'm a sadist. She knows I'm really into this lifestyle. She's in it, but not near as much as I am, or near as hardcore, I guess, for a lack of a better term. And so I didn't know if I really wanted to let her see that side of me, right? So two Christmases ago, her Christmas present was an interrogation scene. But I had to go past, at the time, 24 years of, hey, I'm not really ever going to hurt you. I'm here to take care of you and shit, to I'm going to fucking hurt you unless you tell me. And what the way I set this one up was I gave her some money, and I said, go hide it. And we set a four-hour time limit.
I think it was three.
And if at the end of 3 hours you haven't told me where the money is, it's yours. I've done it. I gave one person my password to FET, and they got to change it. So here's my password. They changed it the day the scene started. And if they had made it the entire 8 hours, they could have kept my FET for a week and done anything they wanted to it. They're not going to keep my FET for a week. All of a sudden, Travis is a gay sub and whatever. It could be hide. You could say go hide the remote control, and if you make it, you get to pick the TV stations, and I'll watch Oprah for a week, or I'll watch Forged in Fire, whatever it is. So it's setting up some specific thing that they're trying to keep from you. And it's better if it's a real thing, right? Because you can go, well, here's a zip drive and it's got secrets on it, and go hide it. I like it better myself when it has real world consequences. Like if you win, you keep this $100. If you win, you keep my FET for a week. If you win, you know, you could even like hide the bottle of dish detergent. And if you win, I'll wash the dishes for a month. Whatever it is, this. So we've set the preambles, we've set this situation up, and they know what it is. But when we get into it, it's being able to create the headspace that they really believe you're going to do what you say you're going to do. And we'll talk about some ways that we do that. Yes, ma'am.
So, like, in your scenarios where you're, like, hiding stuff, like, does it have to be within, you set certain parameters so that you know if she's lying, so you can go verify, like,
the I've location? Never done that.
Okay.
I've talked about this in a lot of classes, of what if they give you false information, do you have a way to go verify it? My understanding is that if they give me false information, they lose, right? Because if they say, hey, the $20 is hidden here, and then tomorrow I go to find it and it's not there, well, you fucking cheated. What I found is most people that are the victim or the interrogatee, they really get in the mindset themselves. They're in the headspace, and on some level they know it's not real, and they're doing everything they can to not cave. So I've never had anyone give me false information. I probably, if they did that, it would really piss me off, but I would never do any kind of scene like that with them again. But honestly, I've never done an interrogation scene with the same person twice. Most people are like, it was amazing, I'm really glad I did it, yeah, I don't want to do it again, right? Because it's the most intense thing you do sometimes. Sometimes it's the most intense thing this person's ever done. I have a friend that we did one a couple years ago, and she's actually thinking of, she moved away in Kentucky, and we're talking about her coming down and doing another scene. But it's been like 4 years. So, you know, it's not like you're going to get flogged this week, you're going to get flogged next week, you're going to get flogged next week. It's pretty intense. And it also takes a lot of work to set up. So I don't do these every week, maybe twice a year at the most, just because of the effort it takes me on a bigger one. I mean, on a small one's easy, but on a bigger one, you know, if you start with a couple hours scene in your house, yeah, you can do that. But when it becomes more elaborate, I'll tell you about the one I have planned in the plans. It's supposed to happen sometime this summer. We haven't set the date yet at the end. So you as the cop, as the interrogator, have to be able to get in your own headspace to make it real, right? And however you do that, it changes you too during that time. And I don't normally ever get into what people call Dom space and those things, but this is something I literally change my headspace when I get into. When we look at what people need and what people's motivators are, the further we get to the bottom of this triangle, the more intense the reactions you can get, the more primal, the more basic they are. So, and this is the hierarchy of needs, right? You look at it, the very top is self-actualization, creativity, problem-solving, spontaneity. We go down to esteem and self-esteem and confidence. We play here a lot, right, in BDSM, people that are into degradation and humiliation. We're playing in this space right here in that safe zone that we create. Social needs, friendship and family, safety and security, and then air, shelter, water, food, sleep, and sex. When I'm doing an interrogation scene, I'm in here, right? I'm in places that are very basic to what you need as a human being to survive and to function mentally. So I play in here all the time. So if I'm doing an interrogation scene, I don't do shit I do normally, right? I don't do impact, because everybody does impact pretty much. Okay, it's impact, what cares? So if I'm doing an interrogation scene, the things that are typically what we consider play are things I probably don't do at all, in the way you think of it. So I'm trying to get down into this level of the psyche to get those base instincts of fight or flight, the three that humans have. And I have to get them to the point where they're willing to tell me the thing they're really not trying to tell me. So this was the classic hierarchy of needs. I really think there's a new one in today's modern age. Yeah. Fuck with my internet and battery, right? So when we talk about those lower levels of that triangle, what are some things we're talking about? What are things we can take away that affect those base instincts in a person?
Sleep?
Yeah. Sleep deprivation, depriving them of food, senses.
Yes. Sleep, food deprivation, sensory deprivation, harder to breathe. Be careful, but yes. Safety predicaments, like I'm hanging you over a ledge and I'm going to drop you. Right? That kind of basic fear a lot of people have. So. Yes.
Taking away routines.
Yes. But you're talking usually a 4 to 8 hour period, so
yeah.
But that in the big scale, absolutely, right? And somebody has your sleep routine. You take away somebody's sleep routine, their eating routine, their bathroom routine, right? Cold, hot, wet, right? And so I have some of them listed here. Cold, hot, pain, their fears, and this is where negotiation becomes a little bit harder, because I have to go through these things I can do without letting them know exactly what's going to happen, because that takes away that anticipation. So it's like, hey, do you like bugs? How many people here like bugs? A couple, right?
Yes.
So if you like bugs, I'm not going to use bugs in the scene. But if you don't like bugs, I might have some of those little roaches they feed the geckos and stuff, right? I might not use them, or I might, but I might have them. Because we don't usually use roaches in our BDSM scenes, do we?
I can't consent to that.
So what are their fears? Are there fear of height? Is there fear of the dark? Is there fear of being left alone in the dark? Is there fear of bugs, of snakes, of spiders, of whatever? I want to know what those fears are. And I want some consent that I can play on those fears, even though I won't tell them how I'm going to play on them, right? Are they scared to death of rats? Are they whatever? Do they hate having their feet touched, right? There's all these things that are individual to each person. Those are the things I want to find out and know about, because that's the shit I'm going to use. I'm not going to use impact because we always do impact, right? Sleep deprivation, if you're doing a long enough scene, absolutely, you can use sleep deprivation. You can use bathroom control, i.e. making them sit in the chair until they piss on themselves, because that just takes away any sense of dignity you have. That's actually something they use a lot in some of the terrorist groups in South America use a lot, is when they capture somebody, they'll tie them to the chair, they'll give them everything they want to eat and drink, but they don't untie them from the chair. After a couple of days of that, you're sitting in your own excrement, your own urine, and you're not really thinking like a person anymore, right? That's where we're trying to get people to. That's why it's kind of, you know, some pretty intense play. Sensory deprivation, sensory overload, mixing the two, like total silence, total whatever, followed by really loud, obnoxious noises. There's a lot of ways you can play on that. A lot of it depends on the person and where you're doing it at, because if you're doing it in your apartment, maybe you can't do that, right? So safety and aftercare. Physical safety, I don't ever talk about SSE, safe, scene, consensual. I don't really talk about RAC, which is risk aware, consensual, kink. I'm more of a prick guy, which is personal, in more ways than one, which is personal responsibility, informed, consensual, kink, right? So I know that a lot of the kinds of play I do all the time is there's no way to make it 100% safe. If I'm choking someone, it's not 100% safe. If I'm cutting them, if I'm putting needles in them, if I'm putting staples in them, if I'm whatever, if I'm branding them, if I'm ripping their skin off and doing flaying, there's no way to make that completely safe. So I believe that we have to acknowledge that. Even doing rope, right? Rope, everybody can do rope. Rope can cause permanent nerve damage pretty easily. Rope can cause positional asphyxiation where someone suffocates because they're tied up too tightly in the chest area and it's shifted their weight. So I don't think a lot of what we do, there's any way to make it 100% safe. So I don't talk about SSE. I talk about wanting to know what the risks are, how can we mitigate them, people accepting that responsibility for themselves, that's the top and the bottom, and then consent, which is huge for me. This type of play absolutely can cause PTSD. It can put triggers in people that they didn't know they had. It can make people have flashbacks. It can make people scared of things they never were scared of before. You have to be aware of that if you're doing scenes to this level. Sub drop, everyone knows what that is, I'm assuming, right? Can be much more pronounced than this type of play. And a centered aftercare may be necessary, including someone might would need therapy with a counselor after this if they get that fucked up from it. So before we go any further, questions, comments? Yes, ma'am.
How do you recommend picking a partner to play with? Like, if I wanted to find a partner to play with like this, I wanted them to be the interrogator, what do you recommend I look for? And then if I wanted to do the interrogating, what do you suggest I look for in a sub?
I don't do this type of play with someone I don't know fairly well. Like, I'm not going to meet someone today here and tonight do an interrogation scene. Right? I need to know them. And some of it's for my personal protection. Like, you know, they agreed to this, but here's a story. About 8 or 9 years ago, I was talking to this person, and I like face slapping a lot, right? And so we talked, and we talked about playing. And so, you know, I'm asking her questions, like, well, have you ever done this? Oh, yeah, I've done it all the time. And I've had 3 doms, and they're all like, they slapped me really hard, and I love it. It's really a huge turn on for me, right? And so we went through all of these things. But it comes down to you don't know what you don't know. So we met. We literally just started the scene, and I slapped her, which was, to me, a warm-up slap. And she goes, oh, my God. Oh, red. And I'm like, what the fuck are we talking about? So that was our first ever, like, 10 minutes together. And I'm like, you know what? We probably shouldn't play. And she's like, well, we could just have sex. And I'm like, nah, I'm okay. You can go. Right? Not to be a dick, but that I just don't want to play with someone is that inexperienced or whatever, right? The people that I've done these kind of things with are people I've known for at least a few months, probably much longer than that. I kind of know how they play. I know a little bit about what their tolerances are. I kind of know they're not a shitty person that's going to have buyer's remorse the next morning and accuse me of assault or whatever, you know? So if you're the person that wants to experience it, I would even be harder. I mean, it's hard to say who you can trust with this. What I would say is I actually strongly recommend, especially if you've never done this kind of play and you're going to do it really intensely, that there's a third-party neutral safety observer there. So if you've never done this play, and if you're not really sure about this person, I absolutely would have a third-party safety observer. And they would be part of the negotiation, and their job would be to make sure it didn't get fucked up beyond what it was supposed to, right? So talking about that, I'm going to talk a little bit about a scene we did a couple years ago in Athens. I had this really heavy masochist who really liked extreme pay. So we talked about and we figured out we did an 8-hour scene. This is the one I gave my FetLife password to. So it started off with an abduction. Now the abduction was planned because it was mid-daylight. It's people, cops, police. You know, you don't want to be. Well, here's a joke. Every girl loves to be swept off her feet until she sees you heading towards the trunk of the car. So what you don't want is the very beginning of your scene to be pulled over by the cops because somebody saw you abducting a person. It's happened, not to me. I've had police come to a hotel room before because of domestic violence report. But you don't want to start off with a scene like that. So your abduction has to be structured in a way that you're not going to get arrested for it. All right? So the way I did this one was we agreed to meet at a specific time. I'm in this old beat-up Dodge pickup truck. And when she gets in, I basically grab her hair and force her to the floorboard, hold her there while I zip off. I find, I already had it planned out. I went to this dirt road that's really bumpy. I stop, I drag her out of the car by her hair, put a hood on her, tied her, threw her back in the floorboard, and I just rode over this road up and down, bouncing, throwing her all over the fuck the truck, right? Like as a getaway. We actually had four DOMs in the scene. We actually had it split up into shifts, four DOMs, and we had three safety observers. So when I finally get to the place where the scene's at, which is in the middle of the fucking woods, and it's this, it's almost like Kwanzaa hut, I pull up, and these three other DOMs immediately come up, drag her out of the car, and that started the scene. So the abduction was kind of arranged and pre-set up in that I didn't want to go to jail if somebody saw me breaking down her door at 12 noon and drag her out of the car, right? If you live in a more rural area, maybe it can be a real abduction. You know, something that's really cool with this, or like if you want to do a CNC, like a rape scene, is... you have a window of maybe 2 weeks, you got a key to their house, they never know when you're coming in. That adds a really great sense of realism to it. Maybe true realism sometimes. So if you're doing an abduction scene like that, where you have the ability to get them when they're least expecting it, would be preferred, but it's hard to do that because, you know, police and nosy neighbors and all that other stuff. The setting of it, I think, at least in this scene, I wanted the abduction part of it, but you have to plan that carefully enough that you don't get arrested for it, right? So once we got through the abduction part, we had planned it out. And here's something I want to talk to you all about, which is the first time I had ever really experienced this in the way that I did, which is groupthink. So it was myself, it was a guy who was an experienced Dom, it was a less experienced Dom, and then it was a female Dom who was experienced, but I never ever seen play hard. So we had all met together at various points in time over the course of a couple months we took planning this and talked about exactly how this was structured. So it's kind of easy, at least in the beginning, for the person being interrogated, because all they gotta do is fucking either show up or get snatched up and experience it. But yes, ma'am.
Like in the early parts of your scene, so how much of it is like the victim is kind of going along? And what happens in that moment when that person says, fuck this, I'm fighting you now? And how does that change, you know, does the past change a little bit?
You,
how does that all work?
That's a great question. And there typically is, if you ever study, there's a couple books on what they call tipping points, right? Which is a point to where something changes, whether it's horses, kind of cars, right? Or iPhones. Nobody has a fucking landline anymore. So there's a tipping point in both society and technology with things. I don't know how to describe it, but you'll know when that tipping point happens with that person. You'll know when it goes from, oh, this is another scene, it's kind of fun, to, fuck, what am I doing here? So a lot of it depends on how well you do at setting the scene up, of when that tipping point comes. If you're doing a really long scene, like if you're doing an 8-hour scene or a 24-hour scene, then you have plenty of time to get there. If you're doing a compressed scene of like 2 or 3 hours, then it gives you less flexibility of things you can do, right? Because I can't do bathroom control in 3 hours. I can't do sleep deprivation in 3 hours. I can do sleep deprivation in 24. So how long your scene is, where you're doing it at, your surroundings, all goes into how you can set it up to reach in that point. So it's very different for everyone. I've never done an interrogation that was really even close to the same. They've all been really completely different based on the roles, based on the person, based on my surroundings, based on what I was doing. So if that makes sense.
I wonder if there's like an ebb and flow. So like if it begins to kind of go in that direction where I'm just going to say that she's the victim and she's fighting you. But then it seems to me is there like this ebb and flow where it kind of sinks back into, okay, we're doing the scene.
Yes,
that
and
whole,
yes and no.
Reality
I don't know that it ever sinks into, hey, we're just doing the scene, but again, if you just think back about what you see in the movies, right, and they're doing interrogations in the concentration camp, it's an intense interrogation followed by almost a cool-down period, and then it happens again and again. So the same thing on a compressed time level, you're, number one, I don't want them to break too fucking quick. Right? If I've spent 2 months setting this up, I don't want it to end at a 30-minute mark. I don't want it to win, but I don't want it to end in 30 minutes because it's almost like what I talked about earlier when I sat there. I was like, well, fuck, that was kind of a waste of my time. So I want to kind of control how we're getting there. And so some of that's reading your person, right? You have to have those moments of respite. And what I do a lot of times is I play good cop and I play bad cop, right? And it can come out as something like, you know, we just went through, I don't know, a really fearful thing for them. And it's like, hey, I don't want to hurt you. We can end this. Just tell me where the money's at. You know? All I want to do is let you go. So you do good cop and bad cop yourself, and you build those ebbs and flows in automatically. Because one, you don't want it to end too soon, and B, it's fun to watch them think things are getting nicer and then it gets harder again after that, at least for me. So we started the scene, we had 4 DOMs. We talked explicitly about what each person was going to do, when it was going to happen, and the things that were going to go with it. One of the things is we really preach not playing under the influence of a substance, right? So the other guy, he planned this well ahead of time, and he had a big bottle of Crown Royal that was filled full of iced tea. Looks like Crown Royal. Every now and then, he would take an actual swig of Crown Royal and spit it out. But she would see him drinking from this bottle all night. And she knows we don't play and drink in our community at our ALL events. And later, she told me when we kind of did this debrief a couple days later, she said that was the thing that freaked her out the most, because he got very drunk acting and belligerent. He literally pushed the safety observer, like, get the fuck out of here. So the safety observer, that one of the three, got in his car and sped off. That was all planned. And he's just acting completely out of control. So here she is thinking, this is our cardinal rule. This is consent and not under the influence. And this community leader is completely breaking that cardinal rule. Everybody else is letting that happen. He's kicking people off. So some of setting the mind space is just things like that. It's doing things that are making them think, oh my God, this is went completely to left field. I'm not safe anymore. What's going to happen? Right? And so that was something we built in and talked about. And it was super effective. And it wasn't my idea, which pissed me off because it was crazy. But what we saw happen is the, I don't want to use his name, the guy who is the least experienced. So we've got this huge thing set. We're already, you know, 30, 40 minutes with them. And then we get there. We rip her out of the car. We put her on this, you know, suspended like this where she's on her tippy toes, literally rip her clothes off. And then we leave her. We just like walk away for 10, 15 minutes. So she's in a very uncomfortable position, completely naked in the middle of the woods. And then he kind of starts his scene. He was more harder or played harder or whatever. He was more violent than he had ever been in his fucking life. Because there's this groupthink, right? And then when the female dom went, this bitch was the meanest thing I've ever seen in my life. So some of the things that happened to her was literally covered in molasses, head to toe, completely naked, drenched in ice cold water, and it's kind of chilly outside already, made to walk and kneel on like rocks and pebbles, and all of this is happening, right? And I'm sitting there like, well, fuck. There's no way I'm going to get a turn because I'm last. And I didn't. But what we saw was every single person that was part of that went harder than they normally do. And the safety observers were starting to get a little worried. It never got to the point of being dangerous, right? Well, I mean, other than what we intended. But that's the first time I'd ever seen that. And I've seen where you have like two doms topping the bottom and they're trying to outdo each other and stuff. But this was a whole other level to it. And that was just an interesting thing that I took away from it, that this is something I didn't think of happening that did in this particular situation. So with that situation, it was a really fun scene. She made it, I think, 6 hours and 40 minutes out of the 8 hours.
Oh, wow.
Well, I didn't get my turn. So, so she kind of knew things that were going to happen because we had talked about, and I did all the negotiation with her. So I was the bridge between them and her. She didn't even know who else was going to be there other than that they were people she has known for a while and that I trusted, right? Because I wanted to be a surprise element too. She stayed hooded most of the time. To your point, there were absolutely moments that were built in where it was almost like an isolation chamber where we just threw her in a corner and ignored her and gave her a chance to recuperate. We did do some basic, you know, hydration, make sure she wasn't going to die because dying's bad. Right. So that was an 8 hour scene. That was a pretty long scene. Takes lots of coordinations, but you don't have to do that. You can do a 3 hour scene at your house. I kind of like getting out of the house, though, because that's a safe, familiar environment. So, do you mind if I talk about what we did a little bit? Okay. So, Connie's Christmas present was an interrogation scene. So, I had rented a hotel room. I knew it was going to make a lot of noise. Because, again, the things I do in normal play, I don't do an interrogation scene. Connie doesn't like needles at all. She'll do them, but she doesn't like them. Connie doesn't like to be cold at all. So before we ever went there, I went there ahead of time. I set up all the stuff I wanted to set up, got all my props set up. I turned the AC down as cold as it would absolutely go. I had put ice in the bathtub, right? So I already knew where I was going with her. And part of her, it's the meanest I've ever been to you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, by far. So what a big part of her was, I went back down to that, not the internet and battery, air, shelter, water, and food, right? So we only had a 3 hour scene plan, but I knew that if I got her super cold, super uncomfortable, super in pain, super scared, that she was probably going to break and I would get my fucking money back. But cold really works because humans don't like to be cold, especially humans living in Georgia. The ones I know don't like to be cold. But cold goes back to that safety and security, because if you're cold and wet and hungry, you don't feel safe and secure. If you're cold and wet and hungry, you don't have shelter, you know, you don't have food. And if you start playing with the air a little bit, breathing, that gets an instant fight. You can incorporate waterboarding into an interrogation scene. It works really well. You need to learn about waterboarding before you do that, because all these things have their own inherent risk, right? But you can incorporate those things that you don't normally waterboard people, right? But we know we do it for torture. I mean, the U.S. does it. Everybody does it. It's a very effective torture technique. So what we've talked about, setting up a space. The longer the scene, the more work it takes for you as the person doing the interrogation. We've talked about creating that thing, whatever that thing is, whether it's giving them money to hide, whether it's a password, whether it's whatever it is. This can be up to your imagination. I personally think it needs to be something tangible, and it needs to have real-world implications, right? Whatever those real-world implications are. Otherwise, it's just a torture scene, you know, and when does it end? I think you have to have that time limit. But you can use that time limit to your advantage as the interrogator. You can change the time on the clock. And I do this quite often, right? So I kind of know where I'm going with this. Some of it you play off of how the person reacts, but I usually know how the person is going to react fairly well. If you're doing a four-hour scene at the two-hour mark, there's no time. They can't tell what time it is the whole time. And then you're like, you know, you look at your watch, you're like, holy shit, it's only been 30 minutes. Really? You fucking, I've been here for 30 minutes. Give me the goddamn information I want. And they're thinking, oh my fucking God, it's only been 30 minutes. Right? I think I did that with you, didn't I? I think I did.
You want to talk about safety, like first aid, aren't you?
Yes. I'll get that. I've got exactly 30 minutes left.
How can we trust you?
And that goes back to like messing with people's senses and time perception. So, you know, they're thinking in their head, okay, all I got to do is make it 3 hours. Do anything for 3 hours. There's nothing he can do to me in 3 hours I can't live through. The fuck you mean it's only been 30 minutes, right? So that can play to your advantage as the interrogator setting the scene up as well. Or you can move the time forward and move it back, especially on longer scenes. If you're doing a longer scene, they won't even know what time of the day it is if you do it right. They won't know if it's 12 at night, 12 in the afternoon, or whatever. If you have the space, you can do that. We'll talk about safety real quick and some other things. So safety plan. Again, we're doing things that we don't normally do. I'm putting her in a tub full of ice water. So what are some dangers we can have with that scenario? Hypothermia, shock, right? So I am not a medical doctor. I did stay at a Red Roof Inn once, though. So before I do one of these scenes, I go back and I review myself, symptoms of shock, symptoms of heat stress, symptoms of hypothermia, just to remind myself, right? How do you treat shock? How do you treat the 8-hour scene that I told you about? She never gave us the information. She went into shock and completely shut down, almost not stopped breathing, but her breathing got really shallow. So I'm like, all right, we're done. And we had a safety plan that we was able to treat that, right? So she technically will say, well, I didn't really give up the information. I'm like, you went into shock. You were fucking done. Give me my password back.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to ask. Did she win or lose? No.
It was an 8-hour scene. I think she got to 5 hours and 40 minutes. And then she literally went into shock. So we literally stopped because you can't keep on going like that. So it was really funny because, you know, we stayed there for a while after that before we ever left. We went back a day later and cleaned up, but we wanted to make sure she was okay before we put her in a car or whatever. So when you talk about safety plan, part of it is making sure you are comfortable knowing CPR, knowing how to treat shock, knowing how to treat hypothermia, knowing how to treat heat stress if it's in the summer. Knowing that you're not somewhere you can't get a cell signal, so in case you have to call an ambulance, you can get an ambulance. Having that safety observer there that's completely removed from the scene, because I've never been in any kind of headspace where I still wasn't able to consciously direct my own actions, but I've heard of people getting there. I don't think you should play with those people if they do that. But again, there's a first time for everything, right? So you have to make considerations in this kind of scene for things like that. So we had the three safety observers. We knew one was leaving earlier. We had first aid kits. We had smelling salts. We had, you know, things to treat if some type of event happened where they got cut or whatever. So all of that was pretty much taken care of. One of our safety observers was a paramedic, which, you know, if you have that resource, you know, an LPN or an RN or a paramedic, and you're going to do something like that, absolutely you want to try to have somewhere fair like that. Because even though I can read about all this stuff, and I've done battlefield medicine, it's been 10 years ago, it's better to have someone there who knows this shit if you're going to play that intensely, right? So if it's a four-hour scene, I'd like to get at least into hour two and a half or three, or a little bit more. If you start getting closer to the end, it starts becoming harder because there's a psychology that goes into it where, you know...
I was really trying to find out.
Connie told me the thing she hated the most about it was that she lost, was that she gave in because she was doing everything she could. So if you start getting to the end, they get almost at like that second wind, right? And I've had that happen before, and I'm like, fuck. I got a perfect record. Let's keep it. But yeah, so it's kind of that, if you're doing a long scene, I'm going to tell you about a scene I have planned, not definitive yet, and then I'll take any questions and stuff y'all have about any of this stuff. My next big scene planned, the person's actually here at the con, but I won't say who she is going to be a three-day scene. It's going to start with an abduction. It's going to, about midway through, have an actual trial with a dude in a fucking judge's robes and all this stuff. They're going to be condemned to death, and it's going to end in a mock execution. So this isn't typically an interrogation. They're still going to be interrogated to give up information, but once they do that, they're going to be found guilty of espionage or whatever it is, and then we're going to go through a mock execution. So this is going to be a three-day scene that is, it's taken me a year working on planning it, and then this person moves away or whatever. And but with this, you know, I've by my schedule, I have to have at least 10 other people helping. Because, you know, we have to have 24-hour monitoring. There's going to be a lot of isolation in there where they're completely isolated and in the dark or whatever. But you still have to monitor them. You can't walk away and leave that. So there has to be 24-hour monitoring of at least two people, one person in charge and one safety observer, and then all the other accoutrements that go with it. But I've been working on this one in my head for a long time and over for almost a year trying to get it planned out and nailed down. So I'll write it up on FET. But if you go to my FET, that 8-hour scene, when I do a bigger scene like that, and a lot of them I've taken down over the years, but I like to have all the participants go through and kind of write about their experience from their perspective. And so you can go back, and one, it's a good learning experience for me and for them to see, well, this is what I was thinking and feeling. This other person was way the fuck over here, though. So it helps you learn a little about the psychology of what you're doing when you do that. So I think that one's still up on my FET. And my FET's Travis, so it's really hard to find. All right, so we have about 15 minutes or so. Questions?
I'm curious about locations. It sounds like you need to be, you can't be like completely gone off location. You've got to be able to get to a hospital quick and things like that.
Yeah.
What do those things look like normally?
So the 8-hour scene that I've been talking about was done at one of our community members has a farm. They have 30 or 40, 50 acres. They're 15 minutes from a hospital, right? So it's very isolated, but yet, I mean, we're in Georgia, so you can be really isolated, but yet not 2 hours from everything. If you're doing something smaller, less intense, I think that's a little bit less of a consideration. But anytime you play, you should have a safety plan, right? Because you can be doing flogging and hurt someone. It's hard, but you could do it, right? But yeah, so isolated enough to do what you want to do, but yet close enough. But a lot of the, if you're doing a smaller scene, you can do it. I do it in hotel rooms, right? You're limited. You have to be more creative as the interrogator, but you can do it. I have another scene that I have planned, but I really need to find, and I, whenever I have a minute, I look. I want to find like a abandoned industrial building or like an old hospital or something. And there's a hospital I know of that I wanted to go take pictures at, but you have to climb through the security fence and stuff. And so I don't want to do a scene there because then if I get caught taking pictures, I get kicked out. I get caught torturing people. My wife thinks I don't think about these risk things, but I do. So someone else had a question? Yes, sir.
Strictly the safety word is the information.
Bingo.
Now, if you've got someone saying, all right, I want to say red here or something like that, but I'm not giving up the information.
Part of my negotiation process is I'm very, very, very clear. The only way this stops, the absolutely only way it stops is if you tell me the information. You can say red, beige, green, purple elephant. and that's part of the negotiation, and they have to agree to that, because
to get them to sign documents.
I never have, because I know them well enough. Like, if I'm doing a micro branding with someone I've never met, I actually have them sign a little waiver that, hey, this is probably not permanent, but I don't know, it could be, because I don't know your body, right? So, but with this, I'm doing it with people that I've talked to long enough that we already have that understanding. So I never have. And if it comes down to it, that signed statement doesn't mean shit in the portal. So it might even get you in more trouble in some places. Yes, ma'am.
But on that same token, like, what if they, like, space out and, like, for and like they're defaulting to red, and instead of, like, remembering what they're actually really supposed to be doing, like...
That comes down to you making the right judgment call. Okay. Like, she went into shock, scene mm-hmm. stops. They really can't remember what they're doing. They're in such a headspace. Scene stops. That would come down to you knowing them well enough to know that that's really what they're trying to do. But sometimes just reminding them, hey, red doesn't mean shit here, you know? and taking that 30-second pause out of the scene, which I hate coming out of the headspace, but go, hey, what you're telling me doesn't mean shit to me. If there's anything else you want to tell me, now's a good time to tell me, right?
On the same note of you knowing them well enough, what about them knowing you well enough? Because if you're nice to me, I'm scared.
Well, it would be nice to an interrogation scene. It kind of goes back to your question of how would you find someone to do this with as the interrogator? I can't answer that question. It's got to be someone that you trust well enough, that you think knows enough, that you think isn't going to kill you. It's, you finding a play partner is hard enough, right? Finding someone to do this kind of play with is even harder. So, did that kind of answer your question?
No, but it's okay. Do you change your personality?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably the only kind of play that my personality changes. So everything else, I'm pretty much just me.
It's really, I mean, I can't overstress how intense this is. I mean, it's probably the most intense thing you will ever do in your life.
Semi-willingly?
And go back to your statement earlier that you don't play with the same person twice.
I've never had the same person want to do it a second time.
It just hasn't happened.
I would do it again, but most people are like, hey, I was really glad I did it. I learned a lot about myself. Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, so that assumes that every play person you play with, it's your first time doing it with them.
With them, yes.
Okay. So how do you know then when you have hit that wall?
I've known Connie for years. I've known Kay for a couple years. The last person, the one who did the hour scene that's written up on Fed, I knew for several years. The person that we have the 3-day scene thing with, I've known for 4 years. So that I've known them long enough that I'm comfortable doing this intensive scene. I've done shorter interrogation scenes with people I didn't know near as well, but because the risk there are less, right? I'm still breaking them. But I'm not breaking them like over 3 days and possibly causing, you know, PTSD or all these other things. One second, there was somebody. Yes, ma'am?
So I'm interested in if your relationship dynamic or if your relationship changed or has been impacted because of this scene. Because I think that I could be wrong. I think there's a difference between doing this type of intense scene between a play partner and someone that you are in an intimate relationship with. And I'm wondering if you think that that's the case and
so
how that might impact.
That was one of my biggest concerns, mm-hmm. was would it change? So I think long term, absolutely not. But for a couple weeks, she did not look at me the same way. So is that pretty fair?
And you still have my thing that I wrote up about it, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think I ever posted it, but I have it. Yeah, so for a couple weeks, she did not look at me like, hey, there's my husband, I love this guy, or whatever. She's like, yeah, I'm watching that. I was afraid it was going to be a lot longer term, like, change in her. I wasn't worried about me changing the way I felt about her. Right? I was worried about it changing the way she viewed me. And it did for a little while, but I think that's pretty much. Do you have a question?
Yeah, so like with you only have done them like single person at right. a time. Do you have the people that you have done interrogation scenes long term, have they done other interrogation scenes since then, or is this a like a one and done
so,
kind of?
I mean, we're not all dead yet, but so far it's been one and done. So, and like I say, the one person wants to do another one after like the 4 year mark. So,
yeah.
But here's a scene that I've really been thinking of, and talking about how we think as humans and how we have empathy and compassion, this and that and all the other shit that we have. One thing that I really want to play with is to have two people that I'm torturing, right? I'm going to torture her until you give me the answer I want. So, and knowing, like, so let's say it's person X. I know person X. I know exactly how much pain they can take before they say red, all of these things. Will they let me torture this person at that point? Or will they stop it much sooner because of the compassion and empathy they have for that person? My gut feeling is that the majority of people will stop it way sooner when you're doing it to someone else than they would to themselves. I haven't actually done it yet, but it's on my list. I have a list. I'm doing an actual crucifixion in May that I'm very excited about. So, and it was really funny. I sent her a picture. There's a link because in Puerto Rico, in the Philippines, every Good Friday they have people that get actually crucified. They all see their hands on the cross. And so I've been part of one a long, long, long time ago where I was there and helped. I got one playing to May. So there was an article this morning about the Good Friday crucifixions. So I sent her a link and I'm like, this is you and me. But that's on my list to do the interrogation where I'm torturing one person to get the other person to give me the answer. And my thought is it's going to be, they're going to answer much quicker, right? Because of this college app. But then if you look at some of the studies on pain, and there was a movie about this one to where if people think they're not responsible for it, they will do things. And this goes into the prison guard mentality, how the Nazis killed 6 million people is because, oh, I'm just following orders. I'm not really responsible for this. I'm just doing what I'm told to do because that person told me to do it. So I want to try to set up a scene to where we remove some of the responsibility of the person responsible for infecting the plane and then see how that plays out. So, we've got the scenario of I'm hurting this person, when will they quit? I'm hurting this person, when will they tell me to quit? This person doesn't feel responsible, how far will they go? Those are just kind of ways I like to see how people react, I guess. And I get to watch people get hurt. So,
the Milgram study.
Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I really enjoyed that
really
movie. They say the science is quacky on it, but when you look at the actual study, I think the science was pretty solid on it. So, right. And some of them weren't, though.
Some of them were.
And then some of them did it really not wanted. Have you ever seen the movie?
Yes.
Read the study or watch the movie. It's really interesting to watch the movie. They do some of the same stuff that we kind of do, but they did it as a study, and it was really, really interesting. And it gave me ideas for things I wanted to do with play. So, speaking of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. With the Milgram experiment, part of it was that there were doctors like in white coats, and so that added to, I have to do it.
I'm not responsible for what I'm doing because they told me to do it. Right, exactly. So talking about the studies and stuff, you can go online, and if you Google enough, I used to have links. I have them. I can mail them to if you want them. You can download some of the CIA manuals on torture. They're publicly available in the Freedom of Information Act, and you can actually read how the Army or the CIA does torture. And it goes into a lot of some of the things we talked about, isolation, making people just feel like there's a complete sense of helplessness, some of the actual physical torture techniques. The Army has a manual on torture that you can download as well. And then there's really some pretty good movies on that. Like one of them being, I've got references in another slide deck. There's some movies that have some great torture scenes that give you ideas. And, like if someone's, I don't know if you ever heard, I forget what they... Thank you, Carol. You're the best.
All my friends are door monitors.
but when you see things in movies, you know, it's a movie, obviously, but a lot of those things, especially if you're watching like war movies or cop movies or gangster movies, right? There's one, and actually I was going to use this in the scene that I ended up never doing, or not as part of it, was, you know, where you take a mouse or a rat and you put it on the person's stomach and then you put the pot on it and you're like, hey, I'm going to heat this motherfucker up, right? That will scare the shit out of people. If you're using live animals in your play, I think you have to be very ethically responsible not to let those animals get hurt, right? So if people are scared to death of snakes, simply having a snake there in a cage, in an aquarium, can be enough, you know? But if you're going to use any type of live animal, now maybe a bug, not so much or whatever, but especially animals that, you know, like snakes or rats or mouses or whatever, you need to be ethically responsible and not let those guys get hurt. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I actually went through my first interrogation yesterday.
Really?
Oh. Yes. And what you said was completely true. I was good through the impact part because that was part of it. And I was like, I'm not telling you shit. Like,
I get beat all the time.
Whatever. It's when he incorporated an iron, a hot iron. Ooh. And he said, when I was little, this is how my dad made me tell the truth. Ooh. I'm going to do it to you right now. And he put the heat close to my face. That's what did it. I was like, oh my God. Like, no one's using iron before. That scared the hell out of me.
It's fucking scary, right?
Yeah.
Iron my neck is a bit.
If you're interested, there's a book, Posner and Dodd, Methods of Cross-Examination. If you're interested in the psychological interrogation.
I am.
That is like the Bible, how to ask people questions, and you're not allowed to slap them.
I think I've heard, you know what, I've heard of it, but I've never read it.
It's a... So,
that's actually a good point. So part of the interrogation, it's not all about the really mean stuff. It's getting in their head and being able to understand interrogating techniques, crossing, you know, tripping people up, making them give different answers to the same question an hour later. And then you basically are establishing their trust in themselves a lot of times. That's all the head part of it. And so for me, interrogation's all about things I don't normally do with people. It's all about the different stuff and using interrogation. I haven't heard of that book, but my dad was a cop, and I've actually read a couple of his interrogation books that I got when he passed away, and I had limited exposure to it in the military. So I've used that experience as well. The person, who's the person who said they did it since the last class? Who left?
Yeah,
they're gone. Damn it. I wanted to hear how it went. So, a couple more minutes. Any other questions? So, I want to leave you with this. It's a super fun thing to do. It's a really intense form of what is really CNC. If you do it, I would say start kind of small, right? Start with a two or I really think 3 to 4 hours is the minimum. I don't think there, personally for me, there's not enough time to really get into headspace on the part of either person in an hour or two. So I think 3 to 4 hours is the minimum. Make it something specific and real world applicable, like money or the TV remote or the dishwashing detergent, washing the dishes, whatever it is, and then play with it. But be aware that you're going places you don't typically go, and how people react and how they react a week after and a 2 weeks after may be different than what you've seen before. So you should be aware of that. And then if you're doing anything real intense, you know, do your safety stuff. Make sure you can do CPR. Read your symptoms of shock and hypothermia and heat stress and all of those things, because I don't want to kill my play partners. Even though no one's ever done a second interrogation scene with me, if I kill them, they damn sure won't be. So awesome. Thank y'all so much for coming. It was kind of hot in here. Appreciate it. Oh, we got Litigator in town.
You have been listening to episode 284 of the Kinky Cast. For more information about this show, go to kinkycast.com. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. We welcome guests with opposing viewpoints. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of all our kinky crew, I'm Max. Join us next week when we present, So You Want to Start a Dungeon. with Master Cecil.